Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Even like doing stand-up early on, other comics sometimes would say to me, I would do some bit, I would talk about abortion or something like that in like Knoxville or something, and other comics would be like, I have no idea how you got away with that, you know, or whatever. And I was like, I literally think it's just because I sound like them. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. Like, if I was like some New York comic coming down here and talking about that, it would not fly, but it just plays differently when they kind of like, I can tell immediately, like, oh, this guy's, you know, one of us.
Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave?
Wake up, America, wake up!
The political division in the country undeniably deep right now.
The big question on a lot of people's minds, can Americans come together and heal?
Because it's not a matter of my liberation. It is also a matter of yours. If you're working, if we're working together, it's not because we're going to do something for the poor black people. We're going to do something for each other to save this really rather frightening world.
Whatever our differences, we are fellow Americans. And please believe me when I say, no association has ever meant more to me than that.
I'm Van Jones, and this is Uncommon Ground. Welcome back to Uncommon Ground. This is the show where we're exploring what it takes to make meaningful change in such a divided country. Well, here we are, another election year, and it really just feels like, especially this year, we're just constantly talking at each other, we're talking over each other, we're talking about each other, we're not talking to each other. And that's really the point of this whole podcast. And if we don't agree with people, we do need to understand where they're coming from if we want to have a country that has any shot of working. That's really why I am excited about today's guest. His name is Trey Crowder. He's a writer. He's a comedian. You may know him online as the Liberal Redneck. What's so striking, though, is he's not running away from his Southern background, his Southern heritage. He's not trying to escape these stereotypes. In fact, he's defying the stereotypes in the way that he really shows that all Southerners don't think the same. You know, not all liberals have to sound a certain way. And if we listen to each other, you know, all of these politics come in different flavors from different places. And Trey is a straight white guy with a thick Southern accent. But in his videos, which go viral all the time, he's calling people out about racism, about sexism, about even, you know, transphobia. It just takes a lot of courage to speak your mind in the way that Trey does. As you check out this episode, key in on a couple of things, if you will. Number one, he was inspired and learned how to frame his own videos by listening to people that he disagreed with. It was wanting to be in conversation and in debate with people he disagreed with that had him do what he's doing, had him step up, had him step out. There are liberals in the South, just like there are conservatives in the North. Even if 80% of people vote for Republicans in the state, that means 20% didn't. And we never hear from those folks. Trey is one of those folks. And the last thing about him is he speaks across these lines of difference in a way that at least stands a chance of resonating with his opponents. I mean, he gets away with a lot of stuff that other people can't get away with because he shares progressive ideas in the native tongue of the red states. You know, the twang, the metaphors, and it makes him more listenable, I think, across the board. You know, somebody who is defying expectations in the way that Trey does, that's what gives me hope. You just never know what's in somebody's heart until you have a real conversation. And so I'm excited for you to hear my real conversation with the ever-surprising Trey Crowder right after this break.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Trey Crowder, finally.
Hey.
Got you on the podcast.
Oh, man. I'm thrilled to be here. Big fan.
Well, you may not know this, but I'm actually also from rural Tennessee, from rural West Tennessee. I grew up in Jackson.
Oh, wow. No, I did not know that. I'll tell you what, I had literally the worst comedy set of my entire comedy career in Jackson, Tennessee once.
I'm not surprised. What happened?
Oh, I was just, this was before I had like gone viral. And so, you know, I was in complete obscurity. Nobody had any clue who I was, which was what I was used to. You know, I got up there and they just weren't picking up what I was laying down at all. And that was immediately apparent. And back then I used to like sort of, if I was doing like a bar show or more rednecky type of crowd, because I came up doing shows all around the South and stuff, I had my more kind of liberal rednecky stuff, but then I also had your more general like relationship or talking about my papaw or whatever type of thing. And I would kind of pick and choose depending on the crowd I was in front of. But that night when I realized they just weren't having it regardless, I just decided to go full bore like liberal redneck and just start like trashing the Confederate flag and stuff like that. I was like, if you're going to hate me, you're going to get your money for real of hatred, you know? And yeah, it was kind of a nightmare, but also kind of fun, weirdly. So that's what I always think of when I hear Jackson. Sorry.
Well, but I tell you, one reason I'm so excited to talk to you is, you know, growing up in the heartland, growing up on the edge of a small town in a red state as a progressive is a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've sort of, you know, taken this stand that it's okay to be progressive and Southern. And but I wanted to figure out how the heck did you arrive at your politics, at your view, and talk a little bit about the town you grew up in. I'll tell you a little bit about Jackson. You tell me a little bit about where you grew up.
Well, I guess starting with the town to provide the context first, it's called Salina, Tennessee. It's in Clay County. It's kind of equidistant between Nashville and Knoxville on the Kentucky line. So it's like upper middle Tennessee. And it's extremely rural. It's like 2.5 hours from any city that anybody's ever heard of. We don't have any Walmarts or McDonald's or traffic lights. I graduated high school with like 68 people, we were the biggest class our school had ever had. It's normally like in the mid 40s as a graduating class. I mean, it's like really, really rural, extremely so. And for years, up until the mid 90s, when I was about 10 years old, the beating heart of the town's economy was this big clothing factory. It was Oshkosh Bagosh. In fact, remember they make very, you know, cute little overalls for kids and tots. They make overalls for tots, that type of thing. And they had a factory in Salina. And most people worked at the factory. And then, like, my family was a bunch of, like, small business owners mostly. Like, my maternal grandmother had a cafe, like a, you know, meet and two type of place on the square. My openly gay uncle, who will factor more into this story in a minute, had a little deli, like a sandwich shop on the square. My grandpa had a car lot. My dad had a video store, Crowder's Video, is a converted single wide trailer. And that's where I got into all things show businessy, you know, and stuff like that. And then in the mid 90s, the factory left after NAFTA and went to Mexico, and nothing else ever. And then there's another smaller factory that made like visors, sun visors in cars called Crotty, and it also left. They left around the same time, and nothing ever really came in to replace them. So like when I was 9 years old, all these family members had all these businesses, factories open. It was like kind of like a quaint little southern town situation. By the time I was graduating high school, like 10 years later, the factory was gone. Also, luckily for us, in the same time, opioids showed up. So the factory left and the pills came in at the same time. So by the time I'm graduating high school, the factory's gone. All my family's businesses are either closed or on the way out. My mom is addicted to pills and in and out of jail. Some of my family members have already OD'd. And that was the same story for a lot of other families around there. So it just got like absolutely ravaged. And a fun little side note about that is, I say fun, you know, yeah, super hysterical story so far. But Clay County had traditionally been a blue county in most general elections for like Clinton and Gore and all that, but then went hard for Trump in the, you know, in 2016 in the primaries, which was the first time that I noticed, because it got covered on some regional news outlets because he carried Clay County by like the largest margin of any in the primaries up until that point. And that was the first time that my ears sort of perked up and I was like, oh, something's actually going on here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's where I grew up.
Yeah. All this stuff is sort of abstract kind of talking point in the cable news world, you know, NAFTA, globalization, the Clintons, all this sort of stuff. And I just don't think that folks who are on the coast understand some of these dynamics, you know, some of the sense of just disenfranchisement, being left out, being left behind, that, you know, those of us who I think grew up in the heartland have some insight into. But what do you think is going on? I mean, why do you think that folks went for Trump instead of somebody else in 2016?
Like, I understand why they were receptive to a lot of his, like, sort of promises about, like, you know, going to Mexico and bringing your jobs back and making them pay and all that type of stuff, you know. But, of course, my whole thing the whole time was, like, but he's not going to actually do any of that. Like, I can't believe you believe it. He's saying what you want to hear, and I get that, but it's wild to me that you actually believe it, especially coming from him. I don't think I know that before he got so politically charged, obviously, when he was just Donald Trump, the reality show, you know, buffoon guy, he represented like everything that they reviled in a person. He was like a silver spoon, blue blood Yankee who thought he was better than everybody else and needed his ass whipped. You know what I mean? Like, he was that type of guy. So it was always, it was wild to me. Like, I was as blindsided as anybody because I just couldn't believe. I was like, this guy is the champion
of the Southern working class.
Right. Yeah. And it's still wild to me that it happened that way. But, like, they have a lot of, like, legitimate grievances. Their lives have been destroyed, a lot of them. But their anger about it is often misplaced, you know, which I find to be unfortunate, too. But he keys into all that stuff, too, with the xenophobia and all the other types of, like, bigotry and whatnot. And it's just, like, he just baked the perfect sort of F-you cake for them.
Yeah, he's trying to make a comeback. Do you think he's got a good shot?
I mean, like, I guess. I don't know. Like, yeah. Also, I can't believe he's still, you know, at his age and the way he lives his life. And, you know, like, you know, I keep thinking, like, surely he's going to run down before too long. And that, but I don't know. I'm not ever going to, like, just fully count him out again, you know what I mean, after getting punched in the mouth the way I did in 2016. But, I mean, I certainly hope not. But then it's also like, well, who's his replacement on the right? Like, it could be somebody who has all his worst attributes but is, like, way more competent and whose brain works better, you know? And, like, that's scary to think about.
Well, look, I mean, I first, like everybody else, I first saw you on this device right here, my phone. I think it was the transgender bathroom bill that you did, which I think was the first time that you got mega viral. Let's just hear a little bit of that right now.
What's up, y'all? Liberal Redneck here. We gonna do it again. Fired up, son. I've been seeing all these Facebook posts about transgender bathrooms, and every one of them comes down to the same shit. Well, hell, what's to stop some pervert from wrapping a skirt around his wiener and going in the ladies room with my baby girl? I ain't having that. We gotta watch out for the kids. Meanwhile, these are the same motherfuckers that put Mountain Dew in sippy cups and beat a six-year-old with a wire hanger for standing in front of the TV during Dr. Oz. Y'all are so full of shit. What do you think is gonna happen? You do know that transgender people have existed forever, right? What bathrooms you think they've been using? And how many times you ever hear about what you're worried about happening? Hardly not, never.
Okay, so what was it that made you decide, of all the issues in the world to take on, why did you take on that issue, and why do you think it went so viral?
Well, the honest story behind that is, so I had been doing stand-up for already almost 6 years at that point. I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, and I was doing stand-up around the South, and it was going pretty okay, you know. And I had this bit that I would do on stage where I would talk about my accent, and I would talk about how everybody hears my accent, assumes certain things about me, but I understand why. It's because the only time you ever see somebody in the media who sounds like me, it's always the same Bible-thumping troglodyte and this is so long ago, I would say, at a Tea Party rally, and stuff like that. And then I would say, so the only thing I can think to do about that is I'm going to start going out in public and being just as loud and redneck as they are, but I'm going to say a bunch of really liberal stuff to try to balance the scales. And then I would do examples of that. And I was doing that on stage. Mm-hmm. And I had talked to my comedian buddies about that, I've thought about making that into an internet thing, doing that, but on the internet. And everybody I ever told that to was like, yeah, that's a good idea. You should do that. But I had this thing in my head. I was like, I'll have to get a camera, because again, this was back before phones were quite good enough. I was like, I'll have to learn production and editing and all this stuff. I had these all these barriers to entry in my head. And then what happened was, in April of 2016, all that transgender bathroom stuff was going on, and I saw this video that was going viral on the right. So people that I went to high school with, that I was friends with on Facebook from high school, were sharing this video, and it had 15 million views. And it was this pastor, this preacher in North Carolina, who was in the woods for some reason, standing in front of his truck for some reason. And he's just holding his phone and he's just ranting at it about the evils of these transgender people in the bathroom with our daughters and all this stuff, and fire and brimstone type stuff. And it's not a joke in sight, wasn't funny at all, it was just hate filled, and it had millions of views. And that's when it sort of clicked for me, where I was like, well, if this is what I'm trying to make fun of right here, which it is, I don't need all that fancy. That would be a mistake. I should do it the same way these guys do it. I should just go out in the woods with my phone and just yell at it and do it that way. And once that kind of clicked for me, then I just did that. And as far as why that subject matter, it was just the big thing at the time, and I thought it was so stupid. I still think it's so stupid. It came very naturally to me after that. But that's sort of the origin story. And it's always been funny to me thinking about that preacher. And it's like, I hope if he ever sees any of my videos pop up or anything, it's like, I hope he knows this is his fault, or perhaps the Lord's fault. I'm a mysterious ways type of case, I guess, because he led directly to my career and everything, which I think is funny.
I think it is funny. And I just love it. I love what you do. And I also like the fact that, you take on racial stuff.
Yeah.
And you take it on in a way that I think is completely unique. I mean, during the all the George Floyd stuff, you said what everybody should know, but I've never heard anybody say, which is that Black people should probably get a thank you card every day that we don't riot, is how I feel about it. But you did this unbelievable take on it. Let's hear that real quick.
I mean, Black people catch all the shit for rioting, but really, given the circumstances, they almost never do it, But you can only push the people so far. And apparently, they draw the line at wanton public murder at the hands of the law. And I, for one, am not going to criticize that.
So, look, obviously, there's a lot of pain in the country over all this policing stuff and pain in your heart. But why did you decide to take that one on? And just give me a little bit of the process you go through when it's time for you to take on something like this. I mean, we see the final product. We just see you saying something perfect that we can all share. But in that situation in particular, what was going on for you?
Well, so the first time that Black Lives Matter got really publicized as a movement and everything was also in like 2016, I think it was. And of course, there was pushback to it, All Lives Matter and all that type of stuff. And at that time, I was kind of incensed about it because I saw all your like stereotypical rednecks and stuff like siding with the cops, you know. And my take at the time was, since when do rednecks and cops get along? Like, that's, you know, that's news to me. My whole life growing up, I was like taught. Now, I mentioned earlier, my mom's a little felonious, you know, but it wasn't just her. Like, I was, you don't trust the cops. They're not your friends. Because, I mean, you think about it, and it's like every episode of the show Cops takes place in either like the ghetto or the trailer park. Like, you know, NASCAR got started with good old boys running moonshine from the cops. You know, Smokey and the Bandit, like Smokey wasn't the hero of that. There's a long tradition of this. So I was like, this is wild that apparently we're pro-cop now just because it's been framed as cops versus black people, and I think that's pretty messed up. So that's what made me mad about it to begin with. And then with the George Floyd case in particular, it was just, you know, so outrageous to me. Like, something needs to happen because, like, this has got to stop. And just briefly about the, like, the process. So I see something, makes me mad, or I want to, like, you know, rant about or whatever. And then what I actually do is I treat it the same way as I do like a stand-up bit, even if it's more like sensitive material or whatever. It doesn't matter. I have the same like creative process, which is just that I just literally start ranting about it out loud alone, you know, but like, and I'll just, and I'll stop and I'll go back and I'll start over and whatever until it kind of like takes shape. And sometimes that takes 15 minutes sometimes or less. Sometimes it pretty organically just comes out and I'm like, that's it. And then I just turn my phone on and do it. And sometimes it takes a little longer, but it rarely takes longer than like an hour and a half, because those are like 2 minute clips, you know. But that's how I've always approached writing a stand up bit too. But with stand up, then you take it to the stage, see how people react to it, and then hone it from there. With these, I just record it, put it out into the ether, and see what happens.
It takes some courage to do the stuff that you do. You could just do relationship. I mean, you're funny as hell. You could do relationship stuff. You could thread the middle. But you've decided to take on stuff that's actually pretty tough to take on. And I just wonder why. I mean, like what is it in your life and your background and your heart that makes you want to take these kind of risks with your platform?
So first of all, I guess I'll, you know, circle back to the first question you asked me that I never answered and briefly answer, which is like, how, why am I this way? And it's like, what I've always thought, but maybe I would have just been this way anyway, is I said my mom was in and out of jail. I was raised mostly by my dad. My dad had one sibling, a younger brother, my Uncle Tim. My Uncle Tim was openly gay. So because of that, my dad was A, more open-minded, but B, also didn't mess with Jesus very much or at all. He didn't go to church at all. And so we also didn't have to go to church. I've always credited that, you know, like a lot of times I meet people, fans of mine at shows who are also from the rural South or whatever, and they want to ask me a lot, like, how do you deal with Thanksgiving dinner? Do you know what I mean? They're like, how do you deal with, you know, a lot of them are the blue sheep in a red family. You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh, and they're like, how do you deal with that? And I feel bad because, like, I don't. Like, that, like, I kind of was just raised to be this way. And I think those circumstances is what kind of led to that for me. And as far as, like, comedically speaking, I think part of it is just because all of my favorite comedians growing up always were the ones who, like, they might talk about relationship stuff, but they also talked about, like, real issues or whatever. Like, the person who most directly inspired me to be a comedian was Chris Rock. Chris Rock's my all-time favorite comic. Mm-hmm. But also, like, Dave Chappelle and George Carlin and Richard Pryor and all those guys back then, who all my favorites were always the ones who, like, talked about real things or societal issues. So I always knew I wanted to do that too, because, like, I don't know how much comedy changes people's hearts and minds or anything, but I do think that it's like one of the primary, you know, purposes of comedy is to make it so you can laugh at something that might be hard to laugh at or whatever. And I've that's how I've always felt about it. So that I was always drawn to that. And also, I was aware before I ever started doing stand up that my whole thing, sounding the way I do and being from where I'm from, but thinking the way I think about stuff, I knew even before I ever started stand up that would be like novel and interesting and whatever. So I kind of just dove headfirst into it.
I mean, look, it's one thing if you're, you know, tooling around I-40, you know, stopping off in Jackson, Tennessee, and getting heckled or booed or whatever. But, you know, you're in a different role and world now. How do you think about your audience? What are you up to? Are you primarily trying to give aid and comfort to other Southern liberals? Are you trying to give coastal liberals a more Southern fried experience of what they already like? Or are you trying to convert people from red to blue? Like, how do you see your assignment?
I'm definitely not trying to do the last thing, just because I feel like that's a really tall order, you know, especially like nowadays. I've gotten some anecdotal evidence of that purportedly happening that people have told me about, you know. It's like, oh, my uncle saw your video about the Confederate flag and now he feels different. But that's happened like three times, you know. The main thing, like, A, yes, I do like the sort of like commiserating aspect, like finding my people, other progressive Southerners, because we are out there. But if I don't have a mission, but in so far as I do, it's definitely to just sort of show the rest of the country a different side of like the South, you know, like, because that message I have gotten repeatedly from people who would be like, you know, you know, I didn't know people like you existed, you know, someone from San Francisco will say to me and stuff that, you know, and so that's important to me too, just showing people that the South like isn't a monolith, you know what I mean, and we're not all the same thing. So I do care about that.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
You know, I live in California, raising my family out here. I went to school on the East Coast. There's a view, though, that the South is the sole repository of racism.
Right.
That somehow the South is so racist and therefore everything else in the country is, you know, basically fine. And that just, as a Southerner, that just drives me nuts.
Yes. No, I've always, and I have to watch it, you know, because like I can start to sound like I'm being an apologist for it or something. So I always want to make it clear. It's like I'm not saying the South doesn't have problems with race. It does. I'm not saying that stuff doesn't exist. It does. But it's just, it allows the rest of the country to point at one place and be like, that's right there. That's the racist part. That's where all the racists are at. When it's like, racism is very much an American problem. You know, like I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, there was this picture that went viral. Some guy was in a grocery store and they told him you have to have a mask on. So he was like, well, okay. And he went out to his truck and he came back in with a Klan hood on. He's like, well, this is the only thing I have to cover my face with. And that, like, that clip or that picture went viral. At the same time, a picture went viral. Some people had called somebody to work on their HVAC unit or something, and he showed up wearing a white power shirt and like just on the job, you know. And both of those dudes were in California, like rural California. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
And like driving across the country between cities, you see a lot of the same stuff no matter what state you're in. And also, like, So I've told this story a lot, but just how like complicated and messed up the issue of racism is in this country. I was in Winter Park, Colorado, and I met this white lady who had been at my show, but this is like at a bar after my show. But so she's like a fan of mine. She's a self-professed progressive who had already mentioned to me that she grew up in like a suburb of in Colorado that was like 99% white. She had previously mentioned that, right? Then later she says she drove through the South once on her way to Florida, and she couldn't believe how insanely racist it was. And so I said, well, you know, actually, it's kind of a pet peeve of mine when people who are from a place that's 99% white talk about how racist the South is, because it's like, what do you even know about racism? You grew up in Ronald Reagan's dreamland. You know what I mean? Like, what, you know, you don't know anything about it. And I thought I had really, really put my foot in my mouth for a second, because this lady said, well, actually, I do know something about it because my daughter is half black. But then, Van, she said right after that, I swear to God, quoting verbatim, she goes, I do know something about that because my daughter is half black. But, I mean, she doesn't act black, though. Like, you know, she yeah, she's like she loves to read. She's a great student, all this stuff. And I was like, I was like, she obeys what? The law. I said, that's the most racist thing I've heard in years, you know, and it came from a liberal white lady in Colorado. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just like there's this like, I don't know, this whole sort of aspect of American racism that just gets like ignored or excused by the perpetrators of it. And I think part of it is because they have a scapegoat for it, you know, in the South and your more traditional types of racist. You know what I mean?
Part of what I liked about growing up in the rural South, and I was born in 68, so I grew up on the edge of a small town, but it was the 70s and 80s. They were actually trying to desegregate. Now, there were some people, you know, going to the white flight private schools, but you had I went to school with a bunch of white kids, a bunch of black kids as well. And I think what's happened now is that the resegregation of America is pretty severe. You know, I mean, I don't care who you vote for. If you're a white person, you probably just don't see a whole bunch of black folks or Latinos as peers very often in the course of your day.
Right.
And so I think that allows for all kind of mischief to just exist in places you wouldn't expect it, because you just don't actually have real interaction. Maybe people are like talking to each other on social media, but it's not a real interaction. But I think all this hurts the progressive cause overall. And I just want to talk with you in closing about that. I feel that progressives, liberals, we're concerned about racism. We're concerned about, you know, racial injustice. We haven't figured out a way to communicate about it that is effective for people who are outside of our ranks. You know, we're constantly kind of reshuffling the deck on language and pronouns, yeah, all sort of stuff. I understand the point of it, but it seems like it's making it harder for us to communicate to the people who might actually be more open-hearted or open-minded if we didn't seem so weird.
Yes, 100%. I agree with that completely. I think that like we have this tendency to like, and I don't know if it's because we have higher like standards for the conduct of people or something on the left. It's like, but we have this tendency to, yeah, kind of infight and debate, and you're not a good enough liberal if you don't do or say this or whatever else. Whereas like I feel like for the most part on that side, that don't happen. Like they like they stick together over there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Thick mm-hmm. or thin. And that's I think one of the reasons that they often win, you know, when it comes down to it. Like we should do better about sticking together and not tearing ourselves apart over these types of differences.
My favorite joke recently has been, what's the difference between liberals and cannibals? Cannibals don't eat their own friends and family.
Yeah.
It's like the infighting, man. It's
yeah,
brutal on our side. But just take a step further. I mean, you do have people who are well-intentioned, good progressives, who don't know how to communicate outside of their own small coastal bubble. You do a brilliant job of doing that. And all of us are trying, but nobody's doing as well as you are. What advice would you give to people who are trying to communicate these values outside of their own small circle?
I think there's a thing that happens where people on both sides meet somebody who's on the other side and they immediately place them on the extreme, like on the poles of either ideology without thinking about it really, just like automatically. Like the last time I was in my hometown, this one of my best friends from high school came up and he's like a hardworking guy, wife and kids, you know, taxpaying, red-blooded American. He's a good dude. And he came up to me, he's like, you know me, man. Like you know, I take care of my family. I do all this. And he's like, I just don't understand why you think I shouldn't be able to own a gun if I want to. And I was like, I don't think that. Like, I've never said that. You know, I don't. I was like, I think there are some people in this country who right. should not own a gun, you know, yep. who have like mental problems or whatever. It's like, and we should do a better job of keeping that from happening if possible. And he yep. was like, well, hell, I agree with that. And I was like, right. We pretty much think the same thing about this issue. You know what I mean? But like
right.
you automatically assume that it's the polar opposites. And I think that happens with everything. And with most things, most Americans are not really that far apart. But yeah, we just focus on the poles, which I think is, you know, counterproductive.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that, you know, I think you have to be like bilingual, trilingual, quadrilingual in English.
Yeah.
Like when I say climate, I automatically, when I'm talking about climate change, I automatically put myself in the category of liberals, no matter what else I have to say about it. Right. You say conservation,
right?
It's a different conversation. You can be talking about literally the same thing. So I think part of the thing is that we all are speaking English, but we're speaking different tribal languages politically.
Yes.
And just we got to be more facile in how we, you know, just even talk to each other. And it's one of the things I love everything that you do. Because you always find a way to make our ideas and our values, those of us who are progressive, more relatable. And I think that for the people who are maybe more conservative, you're speaking at least in a language they can understand. Even if they disagree, they may have a better shot at least getting where we're coming from.
Yeah, I even like doing stand-up early on, other comics sometimes would say to me, I would do some bit, I would talk about abortion or something like that in like Knoxville or something, and other comics would be like, I have no idea how you got away with that, you know, or whatever. Right. And I was like, I literally think it's just because I sound like them, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like it's different. Like if I was like some New York comic coming down here and talking about that, it would not fly, but it just plays differently when they kind of mm-hmm. like, I can tell immediately, like, oh, this guy's, you know, one of us. Now, a lot of times people see me on the internet and they're like, he's clearly fake. This is clearly a New York actor who's just doing a character. That's what this is, you know, like, and that's, those are the things that drive me crazy the most, which I think is in itself a little rednecky, because it's like, you can say whatever you want, make personal threats to me or whatever, but nobody's going to say I'm not white trash, daggummit, you know what I mean? But like,
growing up where and how I did, I never thought in a million years I would have to defend being a redneck to anybody. Ever. Ever. Yeah, most of my life it's been something I've had to apologize for, you know, like, because, yeah, I mean, look, yes, clearly I'm a different kind of redneck, all right, but I still am one. I can't help it. It's how I was raised, man. Love drinking beer, love football, love my truck, love my mama.
But yeah, so again, some people you just can't do anything with, but yes, I do think I can, like, you know, speak to them on their level a lot of times. Because, I mean, that is my background. I am one of them. My whole family's still there and everything, and that just makes a difference.
You know, you did mention your mom a couple times.
Yeah.
And addiction is in my family as well, more on the alcohol side than the pill side. That's such a big common ground area, red,
yeah.
blue, black, white, brown. First of all, how is she doing now? Is she still struggling? Has she got under control yet, or...?
Well, she's doing good as far as drugs are concerned. She is clean. But, I mean, you know, as with a lot of drug addicts, my mom also has genuine, like, mental health issues. But she's, sure. like, doing well generally, much better than she was when I was younger, you know. But she'll always have some issues here and there, you know what I mean? But like you said, that's definitely a common ground type of area when it comes to, like, talking to people on the other side and stuff. That's something to, you know, like, taking care of your, you know, your pill-addicted nephew or whatever is one of those subjects, because at this point, everybody knows somebody that's been affected by it.
Like, you don't have any idea how much folks have in common until you start talking to people.
Right.
Like, you know, you see a white guy from the South, you assume he's never had a problem in his life. He's just tooling around in his truck being racist. And that kind of stereotyping is a part of why I think it's hard for us to really come together sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's the really empathy is the number one thing to me. Like, if more yeah. people went out of their way to actually put themselves in other people's shoes, or just think, like, if this was happening to me or this conversation was about me, then how would I feel about it? I think a lot of things would change. But so many people just never get to that point in the first place, you know?
Yep, I agree 100%.
We see the beauty of hope. That spirit is so beautiful.
Those who become American citizens love this country even more. And that's why the Statue of Liberty lifts her lamp to welcome them to the Golden Door.
Well, I think we can all agree that Trey Crowder is an American original. He is a distinct voice with a distinct point of view, and he's just brilliant at communicating, you know, what he believes in a way that stands out. And I think what struck me was he almost didn't do it. He almost didn't do it. He thought he was going to have, I guess, like, I don't know, a TV studio and cameras and lights and makeup artists and all kind of, I guess, dancing bears. I don't know what he thought he was going to have. And it turned out what he needed was already in his pocket the whole time. He already had the gift. He already had the experience. He already had the point of view. And I think we should take that very seriously, because I think there's a lot of people in the Uncommon Ground audience, possibly you, that is, you've been holding yourself back, waiting for this condition to change, waiting for this class to be taken, for this thing. I think we are at a point now where people just need to go for it. You know the book you've been wanting to write. You know the song you've been wanting to record. You know the project you wanted to start or the business you wanted to explore. You know, you already know. You already know. You already know. If you look back at your journal from 3 years ago and 5 years ago and 10 years ago, it's already in there why you're here. And I hope that not only do you take from Trey his comedic genius, there's a human dimension to everybody that makes it. And it's just that they tried. They just tried. And, you know, people always ask me, well, what can I do? What can I do? How can I make the world better? You know, tell me what to do. And I always say, you already know. Do that thing that you're supposed to do, that you're scared of. Do that. And you have no idea if it's going to work or not, but it's sure not going to work if you don't try. I can tell that Trey Crowder wants to be understood. He wants to communicate. He wants it to land. And that's a different place to stand than just wanting to speak, just wanting to have your voice out there, just wanting to kind of fire off your points. You know, there's something happening, I think, where we're getting a little bit lazy, maybe because it's so easy to communicate now with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all this stuff. We're getting a little bit lazy about, yeah, but how is this going to be heard? How is this going to be received? How is this going to land for someone else who, you know, I can't afford to write off? I think Trey Crowder is just a great example of somebody. He's looking for converts. He's looking for people that he can encourage and maybe win over. He says he's not trying to win people over, but I think he's at least leaving the door open for someone to come across. I think we need to spend less time looking for heretics and people who have run afoul of our own, you know, orthodoxies in our various political parties. There's too much of that, trying to chase out the heretics and keep everything pure. There's too few people who are really leaving the door open for converts to come on and to at least, if not agree, at least better understand. And there are very few people in the country, if any, who are doing a better job of that than Trey Crowder. I'm Van Jones, and this is Uncommon Ground. See you next time. Uncommon Ground with Van Jones is an Amazon original production. It's produced by Magic Labs Media and Wonder Media Network. Our producers are Teddy Alexander, Maisha Dyson, Grace Lynch, Adesua Agbanile, Sundus Hassan Noli, and Lindsay Cradwell. Our managing producers are Lauren D. and Eliza Mills. Our executive producers are Jenny Kaplan and Morgan Jones. Our theme music was composed by The Grand Mess. Publicity for the show is led by Alice Zoe, Andy Lichtenfeld, Didier Moraes, Chantel Muentes, and Sam Petherbridge. Special thanks to Jana Carter, Taylor Williamson, Seven McDonald, Drew Schwindeman, Eric Carter, Trevor McNeil, Carrie McCarran, Joe McMillan, Steph Waltneen, Vanessa Rebert, Ty Jacobson, Marshall Louie, and Chris Jackaman.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Uncommon Ground with Van Jones ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.